of the radio series that's been going on for about one whole year on this show concerning mind control, government military mind control, and cult ritual abuse. And today we're going to be focusing on the latter aspect of this, the ritual abuse aspects, and we're going to be talking about a lot of different issues within that topic. And I have within the studio Toronto psychotherapist Gail Fisher-Taylor. Welcome to the show, Gail.
Thank you. Good morning.
And we should have by phone a Karen Stardancer, an advocate and for survivors and a publisher of Survivorship. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you.
And I guess I'd like to just start by having the two guests introduce themselves briefly and the work that they're engaged in. Do you want to start, Gail?
Certainly. I'm a psychotherapist in Toronto. I also do consultation as well as education in terms of workshops. And one of my areas is definitely focusing on ritual abuse, sadistic abuse, cult abuse.
And Karen, could you tell our listeners a little about yourself and your publication, Survivorship?
Yes, well, I'm a survivor myself. And when I was in recovery, there really wasn't anything being said or about ritual abuse or cult abuse or mind control that I knew about. There weren't any resources available. So when I finished my recovery, myself and another survivor began a publication, a small newsletter that we were doing on our my friend's kitchen table, and sending it out. And now we have an international nonprofit. We have members in, you know, in every state of the United States and all the provinces of Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. And our membership's made up of survivors and of professionals who treat them.
Thank you. I'd like to just outline just briefly about what the ritual abuse aspects of this series are as it ties into mind control, government mind control. And I just want to just briefly review what we have covered on this radio series out throughout the past year. We've heard from Dr. Stephen Kent, professor of sociology at University of Alberta, who is specializes in controversial religious groups and ritual abuse, alleged abuse in this context. We've also heard from Lynn Moss Sharman, a survivor and advocate who runs the Stone Angels support group for ritual abuse survivors in the Thunder Bay area, and her testimony of the prevalence of ritual abuse in the Thunder Bay area, more particularly within the Masonic Lodge context. We'd also heard from Jeanette Westbrook, a survivor in the United States. Her father had allegedly ritually abused her as a child and teenager, and her father and his friends. And it's very interesting, this case, in that she did attempt to bring her father to court in a case, and her father died just before facing charges. And the position of her father is very interesting. He was responsible for all the nuclear power plant inspections in the United States, not to mention being a church deacon, a Boy Scout leader, a 33rd degree Mason, and so forth. We heard also the in the testimony given to the U.S. Government hearings on radiation experiments by Claudia Mullen and the ritual aspects of her experimentation. We heard from quite a number of other people, other survivors of government mind control that has also had a ritual abuse aspect. And there seems to be many levels of this kind of activity. And I'd like to talk and to throw that out as a question. First of all, we've heard from government mind control survivors that have experienced ritual abuse in that context for a particular purpose. There's also been many allegations of people being involved in local cult activity, and I'd like to ask our guests what their experiences are in terms of the different levels of cult activity and their purposes. And maybe we could start with Karen, if you have any input into this question.
Well, without trying to go on too long, because sometimes these things can turn into hours, so I'll try to make it brief. My abuse started in the 40s, and that was, you know, World War II. And so obviously some of the first things that I saw were a mixture of people who were involved in military and were in a college setting who were doing that kind of experimentation. And also there were connections with the, there were Masonic connections. But in the time that I was given mentorship, I was told there was something called the pantheistic occult, and that essentially what that meant is that there are all different systems under which mind control can be perpetrated, or belief systems, religious beliefs, political beliefs, that basically the idea is that you target a person because, you know, depending on what their cultural group is, what their educational group is, where their vulnerabilities are, by what they already believe, and also what profession they may be involved in. And there are all different ways that people are brought into the system. Some of them are churches. There was certainly a church that was involved in some of the early contacts with my family. Also, had to do with their professions. And anyway, and what the pantheistic occult basically meant was that it doesn't really matter what the belief system is. It depends on the person's adaptability, the way they respond to issues of power, and you move your way up depending on your adaptability. So that you may never know that there is a group larger than the one that you're involved in, or you may, you know, depending on how you move through the system and also how the people who are in contact with you move through the system.
So, Karen, when you say that it doesn't really matter in terms of the specific ideology, do you think that the religious or the belief systems involved here are a front for the abuse or for other criminal activity? Or what part does that really play in these groups?
Definitely. I mean, for example, the people who were teaching me about the pantheistic occult were directly involved in what was called a Dionysian sect. And that they explained that that had gone from pre-Christian times, but that it had to do with the professions that they were involved with, which was the law. And essentially, most of what they were doing is political blackmail. And there were systems of belief that had to do with political blackmail. So, for example, the use of the children had to do with, having them adapted to sex. And then you could, for example, photograph or film people who you wanted to blackmail in the sex act with children, which is very easy to manipulate them. So that was there. They had beliefs, and some people bought into it more or less, depending, you know, some of the people were very cynical about it, and it just says, oh, it's all about power, it doesn't really matter, and other people really believed. You know, it's so individual how different people respond, you know. For example, in the one church I went to, some people were very much involved in Satanism and very much believed it. Other people would laugh about it privately and just say it's just a system to get the minions, you know, to terrorize them. So, and that's what I've found in all of the different groups that I've been exposed to, and that's what I hear from survivors all over the world, that it really depends on who you are and who you're in contact with, how much people believe, you know, that the belief system is used essentially to indoctrinate, entrance, terrorize, and it's part of the mind control system in that, you know, all mind control is a conditioned response where feelings are put together with ideas.
Yeah. And it seems like the common thread here, regardless of the how seriously the participants in this kind of activity take their ideology, is the criminal activity. And I wonder, maybe Gail, you could talk to us about the commonality of the accounts of criminal activity within the accounts of ritual abuse survivors.
Certainly. Well, there's a lot of different criminal activity, and some people actually talk about ritual abuse as being a smokescreen for criminal activity. Certainly, there are the child pornography rings. There are child and adult, actually, pornography rings, child and adult prostitution rings. There's drug trafficking. And I think that there are often reports from survivors of cult connections with organized crime, such as the mafia. So we're talking about really different kinds of groups as well. I've certainly heard reports from survivors of what seem to be just groups of people who get together and have maybe an informal local cult and maybe deal in some level of pornography and prostitution that seems quite localized. And I've also, of course, as Karen Stardancer is reporting, heard many reports of much more organized kinds of activity where the cults have connections that go far beyond local activity. And those seem to be the cults that get into the organized criminal activity.
We are in the middle of a panel discussion on ritual abuse here at CKLN on the International Connection Show. We are going to be opening the phone lines at around 10 o'clock, so if any of listeners out there have any questions that they'd like to put to the panelists, please get ready to do so. The telephone number will be 595-1655. You can phone in. I'd like to get a sense now of, in terms of the local cult and however those start up, how widespread, in your opinions, is this kind of activity happening across North America? And either of you can
my opinion, obviously, is that it's very widespread, considering the fact that we have members from all over the place and all different kinds, from cities to small towns. And also, when I was growing up, my exposure was in, you know, from rural areas to cities. One of the things about the connections, even when you talk about the larger organization, often, like in a local group, a small group may not know anything about a larger organization. There may be only one person in that group who is basically coming in and has a charismatic power, and that person may be networked beyond, but no one else in the group ever finds out that that person may be involved in a number of different groups and moving around. So that's, you know, things are very eclectic.
A friend of mine, Christine Oksana, who wrote Safe Passage to Healing, which is a guide basically for ritual abuse survivors, talks about ritual abuse as being really interwoven in the fabric of society, basically worldwide. And something else that she talks about is the idea that basically when people are abused, that traumatic reenactment is really ritual. There's a ritualization when people are in reenacting their trauma. What I mean by that is that when people are traumatized, they repeat something to do with their trauma. It's kind of trying to resolve the trauma in some sort of way. So for instance, if somebody's been sexually abused, they will often, I mean, a lot of people who are sexually abused don't go on to perpetrate sexual abuse, but they may have ritualized kinds of activities that they keep on doing and don't understand why they're doing it if they're not connecting it to their trauma. And basically what happens is that when people are reenacting traumatic events, and so for instance, if somebody's been sexually abused and they're perpetrating sexual abuse as an adult, and they get together with other groups of people who have also been sexually abused and are reenacting that sexual abuse in some sort of way, there's a ritualization that occurs. And so I think that we have everything from informal groups getting together. And as Karen says, I agree. I think that often there is networking that involves, and it's very interesting how the networking can occur, because I think it can occur on those informal bases as well as on those very formalized bases. But that I think the explanation of trauma underneath a lot of this activity really explains the great draw that people have to doing these kinds of terrible activities.
Very much so, and it can come from either direction. As you say, it can be people who are reenacting their trauma, and then someone may get interested in the whole mechanism of how the having a belief system helps relieve the feelings of I'm doing something wrong. And then they may that you may have one person who's very bright who starts to look into it and learn more, and then find out there are more people in different places doing it, and then may network from that direction. Or you may have people who have always had their families or connections in the system that contact, you know, come into contact with people who've been traumatized, for example, through prostitution, sex clubs, pornography business, and in that way bring people into the group. So that's why I mean it's very eclectic. And then you also have, you know, just lone psychopathic personalities who are behaving ritualistically. But to the victim, it doesn't really matter that much whether that's one person enacting a ritualistic torture or whether it's a whole group of people. The response to it is pretty much the same.
Exactly.
Now, within this ritual activity, there's been a lot of allegations of the use of children for either sacrificial victims or for further traumatization to the children in for the purposes of mind control and controlling these children. How typically are children introduced into these cults?
Typically, there's too many different ways to say that there's a typical way.
Right, but just
born into it. Some are just happen to go to the wrong place at the wrong time. It's pretty universal, however, and I think that it also has a psychological basis in that anyone who has been abused, and now that we're building on centuries and centuries of human abuse, it implies loss of innocence. So there's a part of the psyche that responds to the idea of sacrificing innocence because you've lost your own. And then there's the other parts that just have to do with how lucrative it is financially to involve children, and also how easy it is to condition and terrorize children, teach them anything you want to teach them, etc. I mean, there are just so many different reasons and so many different scenarios. It's not any simple answer.
But I think what we get a lot of reports of, I mean, of course, there are the daycare cases where children are abused in daycare settings. And there are many, many reports of children who get involved in these cults through their families or through neighborhood cults. But as Karen says, there are a number of different ways that people get involved, through babysitters, becoming involved with the adults who are involved in the cults.
Now, what do you think is is the force that has created these cult activities? Do you think that they are, in a sense, homegrown in terms of the local cults, or is there generally another kind of connection there that goes back to some of these more organized organized religious groups and intelligence and military connections there?
Well, I mean, again, I think we have a lot of different scenarios. And you have to remember that there's a long and deep history here. I mean, we have reports of satanic cults and other kinds of cults that go back centuries and centuries. There was certainly a big cult that around Louis XIV's time, for instance, that with lots of not just reports but forensic evidence that there were sacrifices of children, and there were there were all kinds of satanic altars found, and it's quite a well-documented case. So we have these cults in history. We know cults exist. I mean, we keep getting reports of cults and cults that are involved in the criminal kind of activity that we're talking about, whether or not the belief system has to do with Satanism or some other kind of belief system. If there's criminal activity and terrorization of children and mind control, we're basically talking about ritual crime.
Mm-hmm. Also, anytime you have a belief system can be used either to uplift or to subjugate, and that goes back to the beginning of time. So that, for example, since I was born into a generational system, there were people there who talked about the occult tradition, and they traced themselves back, like I said, to the Dionysians, which is pre-Christian, and they had a whole occult tradition, and they interpreted history, and they had stories about all of the different things that happened up through the movements of their group, and that was just one sect that I was exposed to. At the same time, I've talked to people who are in Native American and Aboriginal groups who have had their belief systems perverted by, which could even just be by one person who had sexual abuse, who then began to pervert the rituals for control. There are just so many different ways that this is done. Essentially, you just have to realize that a belief system can be used either to uplift or subjugate, so that that's why it's in so many different permutations and why it's got all the way through history.
Now, is it your opinion that for example, a Christian belief system has been reinforced in these cult members' lives or a part of their lives to act as a jumping board for the satanic belief system in their cult activity? Do you think that exists?
Kind of
duality of ideology, belief systems?
In Christian and satanic cults, absolutely, because that's the cultural context, and that's the cultural context in which good and evil is interpreted. So certainly you see Christian groups who use Satanism, you have satanic groups who use Christianity, you have Christian groups who simply abuse the concepts of Christianity, you have satanic, so that's the way it is, that basically it just depends on the group and the people and their interpretation and their connections. It's a belief system, and a belief system can be used to subjugate or uplift. So certainly it's used to subjugate in a lot of different instances.
Yeah, I guess my point more was whether a Christian belief system has been fostered within these satanic cults, so that the satanic rituals will have more, because it seems to be a perversion of Christianity, the Satanism, and I'm wondering whether they foster the Christian belief systems in order to pervert them in their cult activity, in their cult rituals. And I'm talking about the same people here. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I'm sorry about answering this again, but essentially, yeah, that's what I meant by the cultural context. In a culture that there are a lot of Christians, there's always going to be the other side. This is the duality of Christianity and Satanism. So you're always going to see those things. And yes, they definitely utilize the belief system, which has to do with the symbols of Satan and the symbols of Christ as representing good and evil. One of the things that I think that it helps to realize that when you say occult, meaning secret, that basically anytime I believe that the occult belief system goes hand in hand with the evolution of human rights. So as you develop human rights, you make laws against abuse. And when you make laws against using belief for abuse, then that abuse just goes underground. That doesn't mean that there aren't countries where a religious political system allows abuse, because they don't have human rights laws yet that have outlawed that activity.
So what you're saying basically, Karen, is that the abuse goes underground if there are laws against it,
yes.
and that it's overt if there aren't the laws against it. It's allowed to happen out in the open.
Exactly. And I am sorry, I have a dissociative disability, and I have a difficult time with telephones. So I have trouble tracking my thoughts since I am a survivor myself.
Yeah, I think your thoughts are going very clearly.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to also get a feeling for your impressions on who these, particularly the cult leaders, what their social status is, and how can they get away with operating these cults within the public society?
Well, I mean, the cult leaders come from, again, a number of different contexts, but I think what's shocking and what I think is most difficult for people to believe is when those cult leaders happen to also be leaders in other contexts. In other words, leaders in business, leaders in government, leaders in military. And there certainly are lots of reports where this is what's being reported.
In my experience, the leaders were always people of power because the system was about a hierarchy of power.
And in terms of the way that they get away with it, the structures of power are such that if there are members of the cult that are both leaders in business, leaders in terms of, let's say, members of the police department, other members of the criminal justice system, such as judges or lawyers, it becomes a kind of often not just old boys network, but in these kinds of contexts, that's what it does tend to be, and so that you've got people protecting other people. So if there's any kind of revelation that this kind of activity is going on, if there are members that are in the media, they're going to participate in the cover up or in the blasphemy of and outrageousness of such accusations. If the police department is involved, which there are many, many reports in a lot of the reports that come forward out into the public, there are often reports of police being involved, such as in Saskatchewan, for instance, in the Martinsville case. It's very easy for police to conduct an investigation that will throw the whole case out of court, for instance. So if you have a lot of people in a lot of different positions of power, and there's collusion among them, it's much more difficult, especially when the public doesn't know about such principles as dissociation and the way that trauma works and the whole human psyche works around trauma. It's very easy for media, police, and criminal justice system to play on the public's disbelief.
Also, all you'd have to do is look at something like Watergate or the current Monica Lewinsky case and look at how difficult it is to get the facts. And these are, for example, the Monica Lewinsky case. This is something where if anything happened, it was consensual sex between two adults. Look how difficult it is to get any kind of information. When I was a child, you would have something that would be like a private birthday party for a powerful person in town. And at that birthday party, there were drugs ingested that the people didn't know about who were invited, who happened to be maybe judges or a police chief or certain lawyers, people who had power in that town. And in the course of the evening, they would be photographed having sex with little children, filmed having sex with little children under the influence of drugs. But that didn't make any difference. If then people had those films, how far are you going to get in prosecuting if the people who would bring the case have that kind of blackmail evidence available against them?